Sports Pro Basketball Talk podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Heelan. What is going on, Kurt?
Oh, not much. I'm glad the trade deadline's passed. I'm looking to have forward to actually getting some sleep at night now.
Yeah, that would be a plus. As for me, I'm still trying to recover emotionally from the beating we took at the hands of some 15-year-olds in Houston at All-Star Weekend. Man, these guys were full court trapping us, and I was having nightmares for at least the last few days.
Yeah, it's a long, you know, for people who didn't know, we played in some pickup basketball Sunday morning down in Houston, and it was a bunch of us and media members, and then a bunch of kids from, like, the Jordan camp show up, and they're all 14- or 15-year-old guys who get invited to the Jordan camp, and they're just more athletic than most of your average journalists.
Yeah, just slightly, right? Yeah, that was rough, so I'm still trying to get over that, but let's get into it here. You know, obviously, Thursday we had the trade deadline come and go at noon Eastern. And, you know, we figured it might be a quieter than usual deadline based on, you know, the new collective bargaining agreement. Teams afraid to go into that tax territory. Really not a lot of big name trades. Even the ones that were rumored to happen, you know, sort of didn't happen. You know, we'll get to Josh Smith in a second. Quick rundown of the trades that actually did go down at the deadline. We had J.J. Redick going to the Bucks for, you know, essentially spare parts. You know, Orlando's rebuilding. Bucks needed some outside shooting. Knicks sent Ronnie Brewer to Oklahoma City for a second round pick. Thunder sent Eric Maynor packing.
Yes.
They weren't using him. He was stuck at the end of the bench. Suns shipped out Sebastian Telfair to the Blazers. You know, again, same thing. They're going through a rebuild there. Celtics got Jordan Crawford from the Wizards. Leandro Barbosa out of town there. And then the Rockets sent Marcus Morris to the Suns to reunite with his twin brother, Markieff. But, you know, again, those aren't, you know, a lot of big name trades. Any of these deals, in your opinion, seem like they might actually matter or make a difference in the second half of this season?
I think Redick to the Bucks is interesting because, I mean, they're not going to, you know, be knocking off the top teams in the East suddenly or anything, but in a battle for seeding at the bottom of the conference and making sure you make the playoffs, I mean, they did upgrade. It's going to be interesting to see how that backcourt fits together because now you've got Brandon Jennings, who's shooting, you know, around 40%, and Monta Ellis, who's shooting around 40%, and both of them like to shoot. Both of them not really great distributors most of the time. And now you've got J.J. Redick back there, who's kind of used to having the offense run through him and getting to run off curls and picks and kind of catch and shoot stuff. And I'm just not sure how all that fits together. I mean, A, can you even play all three of them and go with, like,
right,
three guys under 6'2 at one time? I'm not sure how it fits, but I don't think they got worse because of it. I'm not sure that that's a great long-term plan.
Well, you know, the Bucks definitely struggle in the three-point shooting area, so theoretically you add a guy like Redick and that should help. You know, the only good news I would say is that, as you mentioned, you know, Jennings and Ellis both need the ball in their hands. They both like to play on the ball. Redick's more of an off-the-ball guy, you know, run through screens, as you mentioned, get open, you know, knock down those long shots. So, you know, if they could make it fit, you know, and figure out exactly how to use them and get them involved in those sets, I think it definitely could help Milwaukee. But still, you know, even with Redick, what do you think the Bucks' ceiling is with that roster in place?
Yeah, the seventh seed and a quick exit. I mean, that's pretty much where it's going to go. And then they get interesting because Redick's a free agent, Monta Ellis is a free agent, Brandon Jennings is a restricted free agent. And there's hints that, you know, the Bucks, part of what they want to do is match and maybe try to keep Redick and make that their new backcourt. But they've got a lot of moves to make this summer and a lot of players, including Jennings, apparently, who would like to just get out of town. So it's going to be a long summer in Milwaukee.
Well, and you mentioned Jennings, and I don't think he's going to get out of town because, frankly, no team is going to give him anywhere close to a max contract. I mean, he'll get some sizable dollars, but he's not going to get a max contract, and the Bucks have the right to match. He's a restricted free agent, right?
He is a restricted free agent. They can match. They've hinted they will match, but it'll be interesting. You know how these summers go. You take somebody with cap space, and I'm going to throw out Dallas just as a random example, as a team who says, hey, we went after target A and target B, and we didn't get that. Let's throw a big offer at Brandon Jennings because we think we can mold him into a future point guard. And suddenly the Bucks are left, you know, with the Omar Asik from last summer and Jeremy Lin situation. We're like, do we really want to match that money for this guy?
Yeah.
Type of question. And they're gonna face it because somebody probably will overpay him based on potential.
Well, the only problem, though, is that, you know, Milwaukee historically has struggled to attract free agents. So when you get a guy like Brandon Jennings, even though he's not a top tier guy, he's still solid. I mean, he's a borderline all-star every single year. He's on the bubble. I remember him saying earlier this season, it's politics why he doesn't end up getting in, but he's close. You know, he's really close to being that player. And if you're in a market like Milwaukee, it's a small market. The weather's terrible. You know, nobody wants to really play there. You're not going to be able to sign a huge name free agent to a max contract to get him to commit to playing for the Bucks. You might not have a choice but to overpay for a guy like Jennings who's already on your roster, you know, that's pretty much stuck and has no choice but to play in your market.
Yeah, exactly. He's also 23 and he should improve. And the other thing is that the other big decision that's got to go there is, frankly, what kind of team are you trying to build? And Scott Skiles was an odd choice as coach with Jennings and Monta Ellis as a backcourt. There seemed to be a real disconnect with what they were trying to build and the guy they had executing it. They need to figure out who they are and what they want to build and start going that direction. And Jennings is a guy you can build around if you're going to run, if you're going to do certain things. I mean, he could be a key piece in there, so like you said.
Well, definitely be interesting to watch, you know, what ends up happening there. And I do think the Bucks improve a little bit, at least, with Redick on that roster. What about any of those other smaller deals? Anything else jump out at you that might actually, you know, help any of these teams? Or is it just kind of like moving small pieces around for either salary cap or, you know, trading guys that one team isn't using just for future draft picks just in case?
Yeah, I mean, it's Anthony Morrow going to Dallas. They might actually be able to get him some shots he can knock, you know. I mean, the guy can shoot. That was sure. Never the question. Maybe he goes to a spot where he can get some of those shots. You know, they'll set him up in the corner three. They'll do some things for him. But I'm not sure that they're suddenly coming back and racing into the playoff picture in the West. I don't know. I mean, the biggest move, maybe the Rockets, and I like the move to get Thomas Robinson, but I don't know if that's a real short-term boost because as of today, right now, as we sit here, Patrick Patterson is the better player. They made that move for a couple years from now when Robinson could develop into a better player and probably should develop into a better player, and B is, you know, still on his rookie contract. I like that trade for them, but I don't know that it necessarily makes them better today.
Yeah, I mean, the Rockets will have to develop Robinson. I mean, he's certainly shown some athleticism already, you know, just in the first half of his first season. Unfortunate for Sacramento Kings fans, you know, that they would just get rid of that high of a lottery pick for essentially nothing. Unclear what the Kings are doing, as always. But yeah, definitely nice pickup for the Rockets there. I kind of like the Ronnie Brewer pickup from Oklahoma City. I think he could actually find some minutes at the end of their rotation. You know, a lot of times they're playing guys like Perry Jones off the bench. And, you know, the first month of the season, Brewer was key for the Knicks. I mean, he shot like 42, 46% from the field. He was playing 20 minutes a game. They were 11-4 those first 15 games of the season with Brewer heavily in the rotation. I almost think that it was a mental thing with him, you know, sort of the last 15 games when he knew Shumpert was coming back and he knew he was going to be losing those minutes in the rotation.
Yeah, that's a good point. And he's also, you know, he can defend on the wing. He's pretty long, athletic. He can work for them in a few ways out there in Oklahoma City. And, you know, right now you're tinkering around the edges in Oklahoma City anyway. I mean, you're pretty much established for what kind of team you are and who your key players are. But if you can get a guy who can help you out, and particularly when you get to the playoffs and he can have one of those nights, or he can be a guy who can defend out there for you and make some plays in a specific series, then that's really valuable.
Yeah, I mean, and Brewer's in like his eighth season. I mean, he's a veteran. He knows his way around the league. And I think exactly what you said. If they can just get some defensive minutes from him off the bench, you know, in the rotation while their starters get some rest, you know, second quarter, late third, early fourth, I think, you know, he has a chance to help them improve for sure. All right, well, the other big name was Josh Smith. You know, lots of rumors on him. You know, the three teams rumored to be most heavily involved in talks were Brooklyn, Phoenix, and Milwaukee. Josh Smith didn't go anywhere, though. What is, in your opinion, Atlanta's thought process in keeping Josh Smith for the rest of this season?
I'm not exactly sure because they're not – I mean, they have almost no chance of signing him. It's already came out. You know, Sam Adamek had it at USA Today. It seems like within hours of the trade deadline passing where the people around Josh Smith are like, it's highly unlikely he comes back here. You know, he's kind of done.
Yeah.
They wanted the cap space, and from the start, Danny Ferry was saying, like, you know, if we hold on to him and he just walks and we aren't able to re-sign him, that's $13 million of cap space. That's great, but, you know, you could have moved him and gotten something of value. Unless everything you know, we don't know exactly what offers were out there. I'm not taking the Chris Humphries deal, you know, with Marshawn Brooks.
Right. They offered everybody that deal.
Chris Humphries for a year. But if he couldn't, I mean, there had to be something where maybe he could get some picks or some kind of value back. You know, I know they were talking about Monta Ellis in, you know, with the Bucks, as the Bucks were really active, and it's like the Bucks were going to rent a better team for the last stretch of the playoffs. I might have done something like that because Ellis is a free agent. I mean, I don't know exactly the details of that, but if you've got Monta Ellis for half a season and then he walks, I mean, if you're Atlanta, that's not – at least that's something. You get your cap space and maybe you get a pick or a young player out of that deal. As it was, they basically just – they burned this bridge. It's over and I don't – you know, they've got – great. They've got cap space. Congratulations. That there's value in that, but I think you could have gotten more.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think if Ellis was on the table, if I was the Hawks, I probably would have done that trade. I would have pulled the trigger. The report, though, is that the Hawks and the Bucks had a tentative deal that that Atlanta pulled out at the last minute. And supposedly the deal on the table from Milwaukee didn't include Ellis. It was Epe Udo, Luke Richard, Bamute, and Bino Udrih. Fun names to try to say on a podcast Friday morning. So all those guys, along with a first-round pick that was likely going to be lottery-protected. So if you're the Hawks, would you have done that deal?
I still might have because it's still better than nothing. I mean, Bamute is a solid NBA defender on the perimeter. I mean, good, you know, very good defender and solid rotation player. Nobody's contracts are egregious in there. I might have considered that. Plus, you get lottery protector or not, it's still a first round pick. You know, if that pick ends up being 19 or 20, well, you can still get. Again, that's not where you're gonna get your star, but it is where you can get some guys who can be solid rotation players, and that's useful. They're gonna let him go for nothing, and that just Josh Smith seems like too big a talent, too big a potential guy to just walk for nothing now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you know, obviously, you know, Milwaukee was probably thinking long-term with that offer. They probably couldn't offer Monta Ellis in exchange for Josh Smith because that might not have been enough to entice Smith to re-sign in Milwaukee unless they had both Ellis and Jennings, you know, firmly in place. So,
By the way, wouldn't it have been fun, I mean, just as a hypothetical, to have Josh Smith, Brandon Jennings, and Monta Ellis on the same team. Three guys who cannot shoot from beyond 16 feet but all love to on one team. They would have, like, broken rims.
No, it would have been a league pass must-watch for sure. Definitely would have added them to my queue on a nightly basis. Okay, well, with all that being said, you know, assuming Josh Smith, you know, with the talks coming out of his camp that he's not going to re-sign in Atlanta and he's going to look elsewhere, what's your best guess of where he ends up this summer?
That's really a great question because I'm not sure he's asking Matt. He's already said, I want a max deal. You know, the max deal is going to be 4 years and in the I think it's a little over 70 or around 70 for someone like him. That's a lot of money to commit to a guy. I mean, granted, he's 27, you know, he's entering what should be his prime, but he's a guy who doesn't bring energy every night. He can defend. He's a beast in the paint when he wants to be. Doesn't bring energy every night. He still has the love of jump shots he can't hit and takes too many of them. Are you really going to give this guy franchise money for that, or is it going to be a little less than franchise? Dallas might do it, but I don't think they'd offer him max. I think that if they can get him as the guy who goes next to the guy, then that might be something, but I don't think they think he's the man. What about you? Out in your neck of the woods, would Phoenix be interested in someone like him to try to become the face of the franchise?
Well, I agree with you that he's not the face of the franchise type player. You know, you mentioned the Suns. There's going to be a lot of changes this offseason. You know, you got both the president of basketball operations and the GM in the final years of their contract. It'll be interesting to see what ownership does with them after the way this season turned out. You know, they basically just whiffed on all their personnel decisions. You know, they tried to bring in Michael Beasley, you know, immediately anointed him as, hey, this guy's the man, he's going to be the one to lead us, without him actually proving anything. We saw how that turned out. They ended up blowing out Alvin Gentry, who's a tenured and a very good head coach, because they wanted to rebuild. I can't see them bringing Lindsey Hunter back as a head coach, you know, even though they like him and they want him to develop players. He just doesn't have any experience. So there's going to be a lot of changes in Phoenix in the offseason. They do need to... This is a franchise that typically likes to rebuild on the fly. They don't like to just dump all their assets and try to rebuild through the draft. Historically, they've actually sold draft picks. They don't like to, you know, take their chances with guys in the draft. So it wouldn't surprise me if Smith is the only guy available and they throw a bunch of money at him just to get a big-name player. But I would agree with you. I don't think he's a number one guy that you can necessarily build a franchise around.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you see that next to, you know, in Atlanta where they have choices, they wisely think Horford's the guy they can build around for the next few years. And at some point they've got to end the Jeff Teague experiment and move on. But, you know, Horford's a guy you can anchor around. I just don't see that with Smith. But he's going to get paid a lot of money. Look, he's a good player. In the right situation, he could really work out. I'm not sold where that is, you know. It's not going to be an elite team. He's not going to Boston or anything.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be easy to see where he ends up shaking out. Okay, well, forgetting about the superstars and the big names, we didn't have any of those trade. But, you know, what about some of the title contenders? You know, a lot of times we'll see one of the top-tier teams try to add a piece at the trade deadline, you know, sort of shore up their chances of making a run to the finals. But, you know, that didn't really happen either. You know, Oklahoma City made those small deals. Miami didn't do anything but clear a roster spot. Is it just because of the teams at the top of the league right now? You know, Miami and Oklahoma City were in the finals last season. They're already playing pretty well. They probably don't feel like they need anything else. And then you look at the Spurs, which, you know, they're, you know, playing the best basketball consistently of anybody. And they're really a system-oriented team. They need certain guys to play in that system. You can't just throw anybody in there. Is that sort of the reason that you think we maybe didn't see any deals by any of the title contenders?
I think when you're a title contender, you can be very picky. The Spurs were interested and involved in negotiations for Redick at points the last couple days.
Right.
And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Redick is a guy who could step right in for them and fit what they do really smoothly and can certainly knock down the shots for them. You could see the fit there, and reportedly Redick really wanted something like that to happen because I guess he lives in Austin, I guess, in the offseason.
Right.
And B, wouldn't you want to go to the Spurs instead of the Bucks? I mean, it's really, you know, it's not a ball there. But in the end, the deal just didn't work out. You know, the Orlando's going to take the best of what they can get. And frankly, the Bucks gave them – you know, I don't dislike what Orlando got. I think Orlando continues to get players and picks and guys they can start to figure out going forward. Eventually, they're going to have to find a way in the draft or some other way to get that franchise anchor guy again. But
sure.
I like the way they're stockpiling. I like the way they're building if they use those tools correctly. The Spurs can't offer that, you know. They'll give you their first round pick, which this year will probably be the 30th pick overall.
Yeah.
There's just not a lot of value in their picks, so I can see why it just didn't work out.
Yeah, definitely makes a lot of sense. And I just think we have, you know, those three teams are pretty much set. They're all like, nah, we're good. You know, we're just going to ride it out. We'll see what's going on. All right, well, we had a couple of those teams in action last night. Thursday night games on TNT, always interesting. First one, we had the Heat making really quick work of the Bulls. I mean, this game was really sort of over, you know, midway through the second quarter. He put on a little 10-point run with their bench, and that was it. You know, the Bulls couldn't really do anything the rest of the night. The final was 86-67. Bulls only had 67 points on their home floor. And, you know, for Miami, it was their ninth straight win. They really seem to be hitting their stride right now. You know, part of the problem for the Bulls last night was, you know, it's still the Nate Robinson experience at point guard. A lot of forced passes, actually by the entire Bulls team, led to 27 turnovers for Chicago. They only averaged like 14 per game. But what struck me as sort of scary, if you're thinking like, oh, I'm a fan of the Thunder, I'm a fan of the Spurs, I think we got a shot at beating Miami, even the Knicks or somebody like that, the Pacers. I was just struck by how businesslike the Heat were in that victory. I mean, this wasn't a game with a bunch of LeBron and Wade alley-ooping, fast break, high-flying dunks. It was just a businesslike win, man. They were just knocking down jumpers, forced a lot of turnovers, only scored 86 points themselves, but still won by 20, essentially. You know, it was just scary, you know, watching the way the Heat took care of this one. You know, LeBron afterwards on TNT, just in a monotone voice, he's like, yeah, it's just another regular season win. But really, it was their biggest road victory of the season. It's the first time they've actually beaten anybody decent on the road. They're only like four games above 500 on the road for the year. Any chance Miami gets bored before the playoffs and dials it back a bit? Or is this pretty much what we're looking at for the rest of the season?
Well, they may get bored before the playoffs. The problem is that they'll wake back up when the playoffs come.
Yeah.
then it's doomed for everybody. And I'm with you. When I watched them play the way they did last night or the way they just dismantled the Thunder a week ago
sure. On
Thursday night, you think, can anybody beat them? I mean, I know I've heard from people in Chicago, and I think I've heard this from people in Chicago, and I think when we had Agri Sam on the podcast several weeks back from, you know, CSN Chicago, the Bulls think they have a chance because they think with with Noah and with Dang, that they can, and with, you know, Gibson off the bench, that they can get points in the paint and attack the one perceived weakness of the Heat and your actual weakness of the Heat and, you know, get at them with size. They can't do that without Rose to balance it out right now. It's a mess when they just can't come from behind. But this was one of those games where you're like, all right, you think you can beat us inside? This is what happens. We'll pressure your guards. We'll make you make bad passes. We are so athletic. We will just overwhelm you. And you look at that and you're like, even with Rose, are the Bulls really that great a team? You know, are they really contenders? Which is, I guess, what a lot of Bulls fans, including Reggie Rose, was saying. Is,
yeah.
Like, we want to see him do something. I'm not sure I would have done it at this deadline. I'm not sure I'm willing to sacrifice for someone like Redick, who I know they did discuss briefly, but I'm not going to put a lot of on the table for him right now, because I don't know exactly how much Rose we're going to get when he does return. I don't know that I want to go all in for this season. I might try to make a move next year, but they're really hoarding cap space for 2 years from now when they – I think that the Bulls have come to the realization they're going to try to win with this group for this season and next season. And if it doesn't work, they've got a lot of cap space in a couple years, and they're thinking maybe we can. It's time to go get another star to put next to Rose. That if you're going to beat the Heat with Wade and LeBron and Bosch, you better go get another star. And I'm getting a feeling that in a couple of years, that's what they're thinking. That they need to retool, kind of like I think the Lakers have. You know, Kobe coming off the books, and they'll theoretically re-sign Dwight Howard. Then they'll have some money to go after somebody. That you've got to pair two guys together, and then find a way to get a roster around them.
Yeah, I mean, since you brought it up, I think those comments by Reggie Rose were just ridiculous. I mean, he is, like, you know, they were trying to dismiss it on the telecast last night. Like, Marv Albert and Steve Kerr were cracking jokes. Like, Marv's like, brother/manager. And then Steve Kerr's like, yeah, maybe we should ask Derek's grandmother about defensive schemes. But, you know, I mean, that's funny and all that. But Reggie's actually a serious player in the Derek Rose camp. He is his manager. If anybody knows the Derek Rose story, I mean, that guy is as close to Derek as anybody, and he knows what's going on. But still, you shouldn't be speaking out, you know, about things like that and saying, like, hey, maybe Derek's not going to come back unless the team's doing whatever. Derek's not about that. I can tell you that right now. He's going to come back when he's physically ready to play. Remember when Michael Jordan years ago, you know, had that foot injury? He came back for the last 15 games of the season and played, and there was a bunch of controversy around that because it didn't mean anything. Wouldn't surprise me if we see Rose do the same thing this season. Again, the Bulls are going to be in the playoffs. So even if Rose only makes it back the final 10 games of the regular season and is somewhat limited minutes wise, he's still going to come back. He's still going to play. I think the talk of him like waiting to see how it shakes out is very much overblown. And that being said, I don't think the Bulls are going to do anything major to overhaul this team that's already pretty good until they see what they get with a full season of a healthy Derrick Rose. I mean, that guy's an MVP when he's healthy. You know, he hasn't been healthy, and yet they're still a top three or four team in the East. So, they had two all-stars in Joakim Noah and Luol Deng. Don't get me started on Deng as an all-star for two straight years, but with the coaches voting him in, obviously he's respected, you know, around the league, so that's fine. But again, the Bulls aren't going to do anything to blow up the core or jeopardize what they have going on until they see, you know, a full season out of Derrick Rose.
And I think what Reggie's mistake is that it plays to the image. A, there is some conspiracy theory. There are people in Chicago who are like,
right,
that think along those lines. And what he does is fuel the fire, you know. And he doesn't need to, because you're right. That's not who Derek is. Derek is, you know, granted that the Adidas thing can seem a little overblown at times, but with the return and the videos. But the fact of the matter is, that's really who he is. Like, he's really kind of a very focused, very committed guy. And he's not going to come back to jeopardize his long-term career, but that's what he should be doing, even for the Bulls. Like, for the Bulls, it's not about this year. It's about, you know, the 3 years past this and the 5 years past this. And so I think everybody's on the right page. And, yeah, there's frustrated fans. It would have been nice to go get Redick, but you can, or whoever. But you can't blow it up right now for this year. You've got to be really cautious. And B, you know, look, the Bulls are just not going to start paying the tax. They are not, you know, they're suddenly not, you know, the karma of Jerry Buss is not going to suddenly shine on Jerry Reinsdorf and he's just going to pay whatever to win. The Bulls exactly. Are the Bulls, and they're going to have to do it within those constraints, and it can be done.
Yeah, let's not forget they actually are paying the tax for the first time this season. All right, well, and then we had the last game last night. We had the Spurs and the Clippers, and, you know, we talked about the businesslike way that the Heat took care of the Bulls. Well, the Spurs pretty much did the same to the Clippers, just took apart L.A. on the Clippers' home floor. 116-90 was the final. Rough night for Chris Paul. Probably, you know, we can attribute that a little bit to an all-star hangover, right? I mean, he was the all-star MVP and then immediately hopped a plane to Vegas afterwards. So, you know, who knows, you know, where he was at, if he was quite recovered from all that stuff. You know, and we've said it before. I mean, Vinny Del Negro versus Greg Popovich is just not a fair fight. It's just not. You know, there's just no way that that's ever going to work out in the Clippers' favor. I mean, and that's why you see such a disastrous loss. I mean, 26. It's one thing if it was a close game throughout and Spurs pulled away. It wasn't. They totally took apart the Clippers, and I think, you know, the Spurs coaching is really going to just destroy the Clippers anytime that happens. But wanted to ask you about Tony Parker. I mean, he's sort of, if possible, under the radar this season, and he's having one of his best seasons ever, isn't he?
If not his very best season, and he's directing this offense. It's been this way for a couple of years now, where he's really the guy running that offense. It's a system offense, but he has become so good at picking apart what you give him and what mistake you make. It's not even like LeBron or Kevin Durant in the sense that it doesn't matter what you do because they're just too physically gifted. You can whatever. It's more like classic Peyton Manning or John Elway, or not John Elway, Peyton Manning or Joe Montana, in that, well, the defense is going to do X, then I will do Y. And I, whatever you've got, they have a counter for it. They've played together so long that they instantly know it. And you could see it in this game by the middle of the second quarter. The Clipper big men had no idea what to do on the pick and roll.
Exactly.
They showed out a few times and two quick passes around the perimeter, and they're knocking down a corner three. So they laid back. And then they got burned on that. If they left their man to help when Tony Parker drove, the guy'd make a baseline cut to the rim. There's the bounce pass and the dunk. Whatever they did, there was a counter, and they didn't know how to defend it. They didn't know how to get an answer for it. And I think, to the point of Vinny Del Negro, this is what happens to everybody, is in a sense, when they play the Spurs during the regular season.
Sure.
They have a counter for everything. You really don't have time to practice, and you don't in the NBA during the regular season adjust that much of what you do game to game. You kind of roll game to game with who you are. In the playoffs, you start to adjust and try to take things away. The Clippers couldn't do that in the playoffs last year. They lost 4-0. They're a better team this year, but you look at that matchup and you're like, last night, you're like, do they have any chance if these teams meet in the playoffs again? I mean, do they have any answers to everything the Spurs want to do? Can they force... You know, Oklahoma City did. Oklahoma City packed the paint because they were long enough and athletic enough that they could defend and get out and challenge some of those jumpers still. They could use that, and they could score a lot better than the Clippers could against the Spurs defense. I watched the Clippers last night, and I'm like, wow, you know, if they run into the Spurs in the second round, they're done.
Yeah, and then at that point, you know, obviously Vinny Del Negro is not coming back next season, right? I mean, because there's no way Chris Paul is going to stay if they lose again in the second round, if they lose again in four or five games. You know, there's no way Chris Paul's going to re-sign. He's going to have a say in them getting a new head coach.
Well, Chris, I would be stunned if Chris Paul left the Clippers, almost regardless, unless there's a first round meltdown. He's coming back.
Yeah.
And even if there's frankly a first round meltdown, he's just going to demand changes, and Vinny Del Negro would be one of those. I know that he and Blake Griffin didn't say anything about Del Negro last year, in part because they didn't want a coach killer label. They didn't want to be seen as doing that. But it's pretty easy to do that if your team isn't reaching its potential, which is where they'd be in this situation. You know, if they're out in the second round again. The flip side of that, I will say, is that I've heard multiple reports now that Donald Sterling, the Clipper owner, really likes Vinny Del Negro as a person, and so that's out there, and that may or some owners that can like the coach as a person and not have it affect their business. We'll see if it does. We'll see how this shakes out in the off season, if and when it gets there, but. The level of discipline and the level of professionalism was clearly evident last night, and a lot of that's going to carry over into the playoffs.
Yeah, the question will be whether Sterling likes Vinny as a person more than he likes having Chris Paul as his point guard.
Well, Chris Paul runs that organization, and as somebody said the other day, you know, look, they're not going after any big moves at the trade deadline. They're not going to try to get Kevin Garnett again unless Chris Paul tells them to. Then, yeah, they would have – and Chris Paul, by the way, over the summer did try to recruit Kevin Garnett during the Olympics camp and some of this stuff, did try to recruit Kevin Garnett, and just KG signed up to come back. I mean, he's very serious about coming back and being just a Celtic. He was very committed to that. That's how he wanted to go out. That's his legacy. And he wasn't leaving to go to the Clippers. But Chris Paul had tried, and if Chris Paul had had more success, that might have been a different trade deadline.
Well, and then just, you know, one last thing on the Clippers, you know, they still are going to have that package of Eric Bledsoe and DeAndre Jordan to throw at teams if they want to get one more piece to put alongside. I mean, DeAndre Jordan hasn't panned out for the Clippers, but he might pan out for somebody else. And then, you know, the young talent in Eric Bledsoe, he just can't really get on the court with the Clippers because they're too deep. So the Clippers might not need those guys, but those are both two talented young guys that in a package could attract a bigger piece.
And I, as soon as they move, and this was something that had been said plenty before, that they didn't want to trade Eric Bledsoe in case Chris Paul left. Nobody expects Chris Paul to leave, but you don't give up your insurance policy until the ink's dry on the paper. Once that happens this summer, look for Bledsoe to be shopped around pretty hard and see what they can get for him.
Excellent point. All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. Make sure to leave us some comments. Let us know how we're doing. And Kurt, look forward to speaking with you next time.
Talk to you then.